Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, we're going to talk about how common cold duration is shortened by taking zinc, and that's University of Helsinki. Also, ginkgo biloba helps protect against toxic cognitive effects of aluminum chloride. This is from the Atomic Energy Authority, and we're getting a lot of aluminum in our system that we don't want. Contrary to one of the pro-vaccine advocates, when told about, gee whiz, you've got aluminum in vaccines, oh, well, that's an essential nutrient. No, it's a neurotoxic. There's no nutritional value to aluminum. And then from the USDA, avocados improve other nutrient intakes. I'll explain how that works. And a surprising link between blood sugar and brain cancer is found, Ohio State University. Then we're going to have some of our audio files, including a reason to support a normal work week instead of the old 16-hour days that people used to toil. Let's see if you can recognize the person who is making the comments. It's a short piece, only 37 seconds. Also, the type of commercial you simply won't hear. A prescription for nature. And we're going to try to separate the difference between Zionism and Judaism with a group, a panel of Orthodox rabbis. And also for those who felt, boy, those televangelists, they have a good life. Yeah, and they fly high. In fact, they have their own private jets. The latest is a $60 million private jet. Well, how do their congregation support that? I'll play a clip where they're defending their actions just to see how their mind works. Also, today we'll have talk back. I'll be going through several issues that I believe we're not getting the information on that we should, that can help us. And for example, I'm sure all of you are familiar with Bill Nye, and he's the science guy. Well, the science guy seems to not be reviewing the science accurately. I'm sure he's done a lot of good, but on the subject of the toxic substances in our food, nope. More aligned with Monsanto. I'll read you a letter by a person who's a longtime follower of his. Also, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, the SSRI, they're antidepressants. What's wrong with them? Well, how about the fact they increase depression, increase suicidal ideation and suicide? But a new study just out that I'll report on from John Rappaport showed they increase the risk of intracranial hemorrhaging. Whoa, that's not cool. And also, 1 in 3 American adults may have had a warning stroke and not know it, from the American Heart Association. These are what I refer to as mini strokes, and I'll share that with you. And also, climate change is going to change the flow of the River Nile. That's not good, because 400 million people depend upon the predictability of the River Nile, and now they're facing an uncertain future as global warming delivers more extreme weather. So from Climate News Network, I'll share that. So you see, we've got a lot to talk about today. I don't have a guest today, so we can have time for your callback. First up, you can get a cold at any time of the year. It's simply based upon your immune system, overwork, not get a good night's sleep, be exposed to some toxins, have chronic allergies, your immune system takes a hit, and now you've got the runny nose, the congestion in the throat, and you've got a cold. According to the University of Helsinki, published in the Journal of the Royal Society of Medicine, zinc lozenges make a big difference and shorten the duration of common colds. And these are not high-potency zinc. You can get like 15 milligrams zinc. So this was a meta-analysis, meaning they looked at many different studies and found out that it can It can impact the coal by 40%. That's a big difference. 40% reduction in a cold? Good. Now, of course, that was just zinc. Had they used vitamin C with echinacea and astragalus, with also, I would use three other things. These are the superstars. Colloidal silver, diluted wild oregano oil, generally the dilution's 20 to 1, meaning 20 parts water to 1 part oregano oil. Also ginger juice, 1 ounce, lemon juice, 1 ounce. Throw all that into a cup of about 16 ounces of either green apple, which is terrific, and or you can use a green tea, and you drink that down. And bee propolis, along with olive leaf extract, would be the last thing I would do if nothing else is working, because that's real heavy duty. Now, ginkgo biloba is terrific. It helps your brain on so many levels. But a new thing that we didn't know about is that it impacts zinc in the body. Ginkgo biloba extract helps protect the brain from the toxic effects of aluminum chloride. And, of course, aluminum contributes to the disease we call Alzheimer's, which is not a specific disease, it's a syndrome. It goes from very mild to very bad. And what happens is researchers found that ginkgo biloba has specific phytochemicals that protect the brain's neurons from oxidative stress caused by aluminum chloride. Quote from the study. Administration of ginkgo biloba extract with aluminum chloride improves some biochemical and histological changes observed in the brain and testes of male rats. So, and you're getting aluminum in a lot of vaccines. One more reason to use ginkgo. For those of you who like avocado, hope you do, because it's just a wonderful food, perfect fats in there. According to the National Health and Nutrition Survey, they compared avocado consumers to non-consumers of avocado and found that consuming avocado is associated with an overall better diet, higher intake of essential nutrients, lower body fat, and lower body mass index and weight circumference. It also showed that insulin and homocysteine levels were lower when you had avocado. And one of the reasons is simple, because avocado smooths out your blood sugar level. Unlike when you have something with sugar that will spike it, which is not good, and that increases your need for insulin, avocado's fats and proteins make a nice, very gradual increase in your blood sugar, and that helps protect you. And also, there are nutrients in the avocado that impact homocysteine, and when you have an elevated homocysteine level, you're going to have a higher risk of cardiovascular disease, metabolic syndrome, and stroke. So, good quality fiber in avocado, terrific fats. They're mainly the monounsaturated fatty acids. Vitamin E, vitamin C, folate, magnesium, potassium, all good. And also, there is a study from Ohio State University that shows that the relationship between your blood sugar, what I was just referring to, and brain tumors, and now it's shedding some light on brain cancer found. And while many cancers are common among those with diabetes, cancerous brain tumors, called gliomas, are less common among those with elevated blood sugar and diabetes. And the discovery builds on previous Ohio State research showing that high blood sugar appears to reduce a person's risk of non-cancerous brain tumors. And both studies are important, and they were published in Scientific Reports. Quote, diabetes and elevated blood sugar increase the risk of cancer at several sites, including the colon, the breast, and the bladder. But in this case, these rare malignant brain tumors are more common among people who have normal blood sugar levels. So that's one of the things that you're not going to get cancer from, more likely than not. And finally, from Northumbria University in the United Kingdom, rosemary essential oil, the aroma of rosemary, aids children's working memory. Exposure to the aroma the essential oil, which you can get anywhere, is important. This is one of the findings of a study presented yesterday to the British Psychological Society's annual conference. Quote, our previous study demonstrated that aroma of rosemary oil could enhance cognition in healthy adults. Knowing how important working memory is in an academic achievement, we wanted to see if similar effects could be found in school-age children in classroom settings. A total of 40 children, 10 to 11 years of age, took part in a class-based test on different mental tasks. And when they were exposed to the aroma of rosemary, they did much better, more focused. And that's good. That's the latest on health and healing. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have all the people listening right now from different stations to listening on your telephone or your cell phone. Just keep in mind, Monday through Friday, noon to 1, I broadcast live. And if you need to listen over any portable listening device, if you're not at home listening over a terrestrial land-based station, you're not at a computer, then let me give you a phone number you can call in and just listen. 641-793-7091, 641-793-7091. But here's what people are not aware of. 95% or more of the people listening to this program each day listen at night over the archives. If you're at a computer, just go to the archives and download it. But if you want to call in anywhere and listen, you can. Here's the archive listen number, 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. We like to take on the issues here that you're not hearing for the 10,000th time on cable and other networks. And one of the issues that is not getting attention is meeting the private prison lobby. It is my opinion, and I gave it yesterday in an in-depth commentary on the Progressive Commentary Hour, where we had Professor Cox, one of the, is considered the best liberal theologian. He's the emeritus professor at Harvard, and he was terrific. You ought to listen to that show. But the last half of the show, because he can only stay half the show, I gave what I considered a progressive manifesto, meaning the things that those of us who are not identified as conservative or liberal, but simply looking for the truth in all issues without identifying with a particular party or a label. Just say, what's the truth? If there's two foods in front of me, one's a hamburger or a hot dog, and the other is some brown rice with shiitake mushrooms, which one is going to give me health and which one's going to promote inflammation, which can lead to disease? And suddenly, before you get an answer, you get excuses, rationalizations, and you get labeling. In come all the hidden influencers, the monikers. And that's because as a society, I don't believe that we have had the understanding that our allegiance goes to the label, the that which is the defining emblem, instead of just what's the truth. So you'll have all these people explaining why you should eat the hot dog or hamburger and why there's no definitive science. And don't you see everyone on television every weekend, all the sports enthusiasts? And don't you see the athletes suggesting you eat that hamburger or drink that beer? And you say, but you didn't tell me the truth. You avoided my question. Which will promote health? Now, do you have any science that can show that by eating a hot dog or hamburger or pizza or potato chips or french fries or colas or high fructose corn syrup that I will have a healthier heart, a healthier pancreas, a healthier brain, less inflammation in the body? And the answer is no. There is not a single study in the world that proves that. But if I say, yes, I can show you at least 1,000 studies on mushrooms. Now, do you want a shiitake mushroom, a white cap mushroom, maitake, reishi mushroom, oyster mushrooms? They all have medicinal value, and the science is there. And there's a difference between brown rice, which is not refined, and white rice, which is refined. One is just a empty calorie carbohydrate. The other is filled with nutrients. You think it would be relatively easy to get that information. It's not. Because we have institutionalized virtually everything that we have commodified. It's like a brand. The brand is what people want. It becomes secondary in importance of the quality of the brand. There's assumptions made that if you buy one particular car that has a good brand, that you are, in effect, buying something better than another brand. That may or may not be the case. When people buy a corporation, all they really ultimately care about is the brand. They don't care about the product. They can take the product and make it in China. They can make it in India. They can make it in Bangladesh. Then bring it back in. As long as the brand's there, people will buy it. They're not going to say what went into making this product. So remember, we are brand conditioned, where some people will only go to the Wall Street Journal to get their financial advice, or Barron's, or Forbes. Others will go to a Fox Business Network. Others who want to get their so-called liberal media will go to MSNBC. But is it truly liberal, or is it corporatist? Well, it's corporatist. Look who controls it. Look at the ads they put on there. Look at the people they have from the different think tanks coming forward. We're just not going deep enough to see how we've been played. Well, in all this, you end up having the prison lobby. Because if we were really an ethical society, we would not have a war on drugs. There'd be no criminalization of drugs. We would have treatment centers in every community in America where you would get humanistic, holistic treatment to help you get off the drugs and detoxify your body. We would take every single person in prison and let them out for nonviolence. If you haven't been violent in something, then you should be working within a community to rehabilitate yourself and do something positive to help. Work on a food bank. Be a big brother, be a big sister. Be responsible to helping another human being develop their character in the process regaining yours. Do you really think the gang raping people in prison and getting them to shave their hair and put tattoos on so they belong to a gang, that's what we want coming back out on the streets? Because that's what's coming back out on the streets. In Norway, a far more civilized country than our own in many respects, prisoners can come and go as they want. They go out on the weekends. Even people on death row or convicted of killing people, because their society says sooner or later, you're going to come back and we don't want you coming back the way you went in. We want you civilized. We want you being able to adapt to the moral standards that every society should have. Show me a society that succeeds without moral standards, and you've got anarchy. But there's a reason why we have a war on drugs. There's a reason why we have a war on cancer, a war on poverty. There's a reason why we have a war on illegal immigrants. There's a reason why we have a war on regime and involved in regime change in Libya and Syria. It has nothing to do with these individuals or countries posing a real or existential threat to the United States. It has to do with someone is profiting off the label. It is the label. And that's what the brand. And that's why there are hundreds of thousands of lobbyists in Washington every single day going up to Capitol Hill to cajole, bribe, or convince some legislator that we don't want this rule, but we do want that. And we don't pay attention to these more often than not. And as a result, we get, instead of universal health care, that everybody can walk into any health center and get healed, helped, medicated, whatever they needed, and walk out. Not the paperwork, not the insurance, not the co-pays, nothing. Because a civilized society would know that first you would have a program that would prevent disease, and you would have it mandatory in every school from first grade to graduate school. Every year, every student must take courses in preventative health care and environmental awareness. Because we're associated, our health is also associated with our environment. We could then cut disease by at least 70 to 80%, and then take the profit out of healthcare, and then you're not exploiting persons' diseases. But we don't do that, but we should. But one area that we have not looked at is our prison system, and we should, because, quite frankly, it is a disgrace. I want to share some thoughts from Lauren Carlson from Counterpunch, and it's an article entitled Meet the Private Prison Lobby. I'll quote it. And then I'd like your opinion, what you believe we should do in our judiciary, which is completely failed and corrupt, in sentencing guidelines, which are corrupt, in our war on drugs, which is entirely corrupt. It is a perversion of justice. And how would you feel about creating a better system, one that is just, one that does not criminalize everything? Should you be arrested, slammed to the ground, as a woman was walking across the campus down in Texas, University of Texas, because she had jaywalked, tore up her face for jaywalking? As the immigration, quote, reform debate heats up, an important argument has been surprisingly missing. By granting legal status to immigrants and ordering further flows, the government could save billions of dollars. A shift to focus border security on real crime, both local and cross-border, would increase public safety and render a huge dividend to cash-strapped public offices. This kind of common-sense immigration reform has the multi-billion-dollar private prison industry shaking in its boots. Its lobbyists are actively targeting members of congressional budget and appropriations committees to not only maintain but increase incarceration of immigrants with or without comprehensive immigration reform. While a broad public consensus is formed around the need to legally integrate immigrants into the communities where they live and work, private prison companies, Correction Corporations of America, and the CEO group thrive off laws that criminalize migrants, including mandatory detention and the definition of immigration violations as felonies, no matter how minor they may be. CAA and GEO, also know that in the current immigration debate, they cannot come straight out and say immigrants should be defined as criminals because they make us rich, even though it does. CCA comes pretty close to saying this in its annual report, where it warns, quote, any changes in the laws with respect to drugs and controlled substances or illegal immigration could affect the number of persons arrested, convicted, and sentenced, thereby potentially reducing demand for correctional facilities to house them, end quote. So most of their work is behind the scenes. Their number one goal, to assure that no matter what else happens, their goose of the golden egg laying survives with more money than ever. Border enforcement, immigration reform, all that is secondary. Operation Streamline began in 2005, imprisons men and women and children for immigration violations, sometimes up to 10 months, and it channels more than $1 billion a year in federal funds to private-run detention centers. Then it goes on to talk about locking all these people up and who they've got on their side. Among the gang of eight senators, all but Lindsey Graham and John McCain have received a significant money stream from the private prison corporations. The transparency watchdog Open Secrets compiled the figures by adding contributions from members, employees, PACs, and immediate family members. Chuck Schumer, Democrat in New York, chair of the Rules Committee, member of the Judiciary, and chair of the Subcommittee on Immigration and Border Enforcement. Schumer received tens of thousands of dollars from these groups. Marco Rubio from Florida, Bob Menendez from New Jersey, Michael Bennett, Democrat from Colorado. Wow. So the prison lobby also targeted other key members of Congress, Patty Murray from Democrat from Washington, chair of the State Senate Budget Committee and member of the Appropriations, received tens of thousands of dollars from these groups. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Democrat from Florida, who's on the House Budget and Judiciary Committees, received money, tens of thousands of dollars. See, what these lobbyists want for their money is an immigration reform bill that tightens rather than loosens the criminal net for undocumented workers and their families. That's how it works. Separately, this is from the Brennan Center for Justice. Quote, nearly 40% of the U.S. prison population, that's 576,000 people, are behind bars with no compelling public safety reason, according to New York University School of Law, Brennan Center for Justice. The first of its kind analysis provides a blueprint for how the country can drastically cut its prison population while still keeping crime rates near historic lows. Among the key findings, 25% of the country's prisoners, or 364,000 inmates, who are nearly all nonviolent, lower-level offenders, would be better served by alternatives to incarceration, such as community service or probation. And then it goes on to all the others of how we could save $20 billion a year. And we're not doing that. It took 3 years to research this, and so we thank them for that. So now at least you have a figure. Keep that figure in mind. 40% of all the people in jail in the United States shouldn't be there. There is no good reason for them to be there. I also want to share you something for those who are in power now, all of the people in power now, virtually all of them. And by the way, this also means that if Hillary Clinton would have been elected, the same statistics would have also been the case. And that is that there would have still been a heavy footprint in the Middle East, in Iraq and Afghanistan, Syria. This is from Joe Quinn of Scott.net. 10 years on, Iraq lies in ruins as new evidence confirms U.S. government used death squads to manufacture an artificial civil war. Quote, I wrote the following on the then Signs of the Times page. Quote, as I sit here, a motion in the UK House of Commons has been defeated by some 415 votes to 149. Not that any other result would have stopped the U.S., yet it signifies a full green light for the attack on Iraq. Bush's ultimatum to Saddam expires at midnight, Thursday. Shock and awe, meaning death and destruction, may come at any moment between now and then. We have at most one day left to ponder at the edge of the abyss before the coming darkness engulfs us all. End quote. Now, today, as if to mock those who are against this illegal invasion and the lies and deceit that have been used to justify it, Ari Fleischer today stated, even if Saddam went into exile now, the U.S. would still invade. It's not about weapons of mass destruction. It's about the domination and the destructive principle. Perhaps Ari feels he can be more truthful now that he has done his deal, now that Cheney, Rumsfeld, and Blair have told the peace-loving people of the world to go screw themselves. It must have been hard for Fleischer to stand up in front of the world's media every day and lie so profusely. Then again, maybe not. It's hard for me to describe the feeling I have right now. There is an enormous sense of impending doom mixed with anger at being made to feel so helpless in the face of such rampant psychopathy. Who are these men that they can simply decide to throw the world and its inhabitants into war without end? And who are we that they could do this for so long, fool us with such pathetic and barely disguised lies, and know that we would just roll over and let them get away with it. End quote. The U.S. and British military launched Operation Iraqi Freedom, also called Operation Destroy the Critical Infrastructure of Iraq, and initiated an overt, decades-long attack on occupation and the Iraqi people. To date, at least 1.5 million Iraqi civilians have been murdered, and at least 5 million Iraqi civilians have been displaced from their homes as a direct result of our liberation. This on top of millions killed and impoverished by U.S.-led economic sanctions in the preceding decade. Deadly car bombings continue to this day. Suffice to say, Iraq was not liberated. It was destroyed, and destroyed deliberately. The United Kingdom Guardian published the results of a 15-month investigation by The Guardian and the BBC Arabic, emphatically titled, quote, James Steele, that's S-T-E-E-L-E, America's Mystery Man in Iraq. The video report presents fairly damning evidence that in the immediate aftermath of the U.S. invasion, 2003, of Iraq, listen carefully because you haven't heard this before. This is new to you. Quote, the U.S. government and military began to assemble a 10,000-strong Shia militia that was under U.S. command that would be used to do three things. One, kidnap, torture, murder, and maim members of the Iraqi resistance and those members of the Iraq population that supported them. Two, plant bombs that targeted predominantly Sunni and Shia areas in an effort to divide the population, thereby any unified resistance to U.S. occupation. Three, create the impression of a civil war in Iraq that could be used by the U.S. and European governments and militaries to justify the continued occupation of Iraq for so-called peacekeeping purposes. Wow. Create the impression of a civil war. Syria. Libya. Yeah. And while the 50-minute documentary is proof enough that Rumsfeld, Cheney, General Petraeus, and all the other neocon war hawks and CIA monsters consciously employed the services of former U.S. Army Colonel James Steele in the organization of death squads against the Iraqi grassroots resistance. And by the way, that was a tactic that Steele had perfected in South America in the 1970s through the 90s. It panders to the official narrative that sectarianism in Iraq was the root cause of the carnage that unfolded. The so-called Shia militia used by the American government with the help and advice of the British and Israeli counterinsurgency experts were recruited directly by the CIA and people like James Steele to carry out extrajudicial murders of everyone they could loosely identify as resistance. In order to cloak this strategy, indiscriminate attacks on Iraqi civilians, Shia and Sunni alike, were carried out on a massive scale. Some of these individuals, in another setting, would be called Al-Qaeda. Their usefulness in the employ of the U.S. war hawks and in the Pentagon was doubly valuable because they both justified continuing U.S. occupation and provided proof for the American War on Terror mythology, ex post facto, that the U.S. was at war with the perpetrators of 9/11. Whereas before the invasion of 2003, there was absolutely nothing to link, nothing, zero, 9/11 to Saddam Hussein. The creation of death squads, labeled Al-Qaeda in Iraq, was fictitious. There were no death squads before 2003. The lie that American all Western civilization was at war against hordes of irrational and violent Muslims and became the template for instigating terrorism to suppress popular uprisings in Yemen, Mali, and elsewhere. So once they have people violent, they can wear down and manage the national popular resistance, ensuring no opposition to the real strategic objectives, mainly, we want to control the Middle East oil. The United States forces of occupation, along with their British counterparts, had long experience in what actually happens when you militarily invade and occupy a sovereign nation. The people resist. And not just one ethnic or religious group, but more or less the whole population resists. There's nothing quite like a foreign occupation for uniting a country. The British pursued this policy in Northern Ireland. First, they sought the criminalization of the conflict, presenting all resistance as terrorist, and then the Ulsterization of the conflict, which sought to create the impression among the wider British and world public that the struggle in Northern Ireland was an internal sectarian conflict, with the British playing the role of the frustrated peacekeepers. It wasn't true, though. Both strategies were outlined in an unpublished 1975 British strategy paper called The Way Ahead, as part of the effort to create the reality of a civil war. Death squads were used to attack civilians from both communities, Catholic and Protestant. So, good friends from Ireland, were you aware of that? I'm sure many in the IRA were aware of it, we're all aware of it, that you're both being played. You're both being attacked. Death squads by the British government was put into place to make it seem as if the British had to come in and seek peace. They mastered that game. In Iraq, the U.S.-controlled Shia death squads have been operating in much the same way. And while the media is content to portray them as ordinary Shias motivated by religious bias, they are in fact hired thugs who value only the money they are paid by their U.S. masters and the promise of a position of power in a future Iraqi government. Like the rank and file, the Libyan rebels, that did not exist, by the way, in reality, and the Free Syrian Army, these people form the dregs of Arab and Middle Eastern societies, led by spellbinders who veil their barbaric actions with religious prose. Secular leaders in the region, like Gaddafi and Assad and Nasser and Arafat, before them struggled in vain to keep them at bay. The reasons for this is because the U.S., Britain, France, and Israel have consistently supported, in the form of weapons, money, training, and blatant lies, the extremist against the rational voices. Throughout the U.S. occupation of Iraq, the main representatives of Shia in Iraq, Muqtada Sadr, has repeatedly called for unity among Shia and Sunni Iraqis in the face of foreign occupation and deception in the form of efforts to divide the resistance. These efforts included the bombing of bridges in Baghdad and other Iraqi cities in an effort to prevent communications between Iraqis, the use of widespread terror tactics to force Sunni and Shia Iraqis to flee their homes, and the bombing of religious shrines, either Shia or Sunni, in an effort to create the reality of a sectarian strife that did not exist. Iraq today is in ruins. The country has been ripped apart socially, mainly by the way the literal ripping apart of tens of thousands of civilians, with many being first brutally and systematically tortured by U.S.-sponsored death squads. Hundreds of thousands more have been summarily murdered, either by the bombs of U.S. aircraft, the bullets of U.S. soldiers, or those ubiquitous and very effective car bombs planted by U.S. and British operatives and their hired thugs. Operation Iraqi Freedom brought death, destruction to an entire country of 26 million people. It is among the world's worst crimes against humanity, and it was deliberately and meticulously planned that way. End quote. Your thoughts. Why is it that none of the mainstream media or network media or most of the alternative media have not brought this up? There is no statute of limitations against crimes against humanity. That means that the Clintons, who are part of this, the Bushes, the Obamas, all of these people and all their supporters, all their enablers, Condoleezza Rice's, all these people could be held accountable and should be. But they won't be. In fact, Obama will be the first ex-president billionaire. And he'll be regaled and he will make an enormous amount of money for all the things he did for the right people and what he didn't do for everyone else. That's how it works. I'm Gary Nall. Time for Talk Back, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Your thoughts on these issues, and while you're thinking about this, let's hear from a person. Let's see if you know his name, who was talking about why we don't want to destroy unions, shouldn't, because without the unions, we would have had 16-hour work days.
Is it? We hate unions. They're terrible. They're no good. They're gangsters. And I say, how many hours a day do you work, to this couple? And they say, we work 8 hours a day. Why don't you work 16 hours a day? 16, yeah, because your great-grandparents work 16 hours a day. You know why you're working 8 hours a day? Because four guys in Chicago got hanged for you in 1886, the Haymarket case, very famous, not in regular history books. They were campaigning for the eight-hour day. So these four guys were hanged for you, and you're talking about condemning union.
Think about that. Now let's hear from a commercial that you won't hear on television.
Do you find yourself longing for the apocalypse? I did. I was looking for a reason to live. Hi, Are you feeling tired, irritable, stressed out? Well, you might consider Nature.
From the people that brought you Getting Outside comes prescription-strength Nature, a non-harmful medication shown to relieve the crippling symptoms of modern life.
Nature's recommended for humans of all ages, and it's great for pets, too.
Nature can reduce cynicism, meaninglessness, anal retentiveness, and murderous rage. In clinical studies, Nature is proven to decrease work-induced catatonia.
Caution. Nature may cause you to slow down, quit your job, or seriously consider what the f*** you're doing with your life.
If you are overly cynical, jaded, or emotionally numb, you may need to increase your dose of Nature. Do you have trouble being even mildly uncomfortable? Nature may not be right for you. Side effects may include spontaneous euphoria, taking yourself less seriously, and being in a good mood for no apparent reason.
So ask your doctor if Nature is right for you.
And also, I'm sure that many of you have seen the kind of the very tacky, extravagant clothes and hairstyles. Reminds me of, gee whiz, Wayne Newt must have been designing something behind the scenes we didn't see. In any case, these televangelists, I just think they're funny. But then you realize how much money they make from their congregations, frequently from people who have very little to give. So here's one of those rare situations where two of them, this is not a parody, this is real, where two of these very famous televangelists are trying to explain why, well, they can't fly coach because God couldn't hear their prayers. Listen to what they have to say.
Well, first, before I read the scripture, Amos chapter 6, Brother Copeland and I was flying home from a meeting, and I had come out of a glorious meeting. I had just finished, me and Creflo Dollar were preaching. Had a glorious meeting. So I was, for lack of a better way to say it, I was spiritually high. I said, people were saved, touched, and blessed. Got in the plane that God so graciously gave us, and we're flying home. As I was going home, the Lord, real quickly, he said, Jesse, do you like your plane? Now, you know, I thought that's an odd statement. I said, well, certainly, Lord. He said, do you really like it? And I thought, well, yes, Lord. He said, then he said this, so that's it? I didn't know how to handle it for him. I went, what? He said, you're going to let your faith stagnate? Now, when he said that, that shocked me. I went, whoa, wait. I literally unbuckled my seatbelt, my plane. I stood up. My pilots looked around and said, do you need something? I said, no, I'm talking to God right now. And he went back to flying. I said, Lord, I don't think I was letting my faith stagnate. He said, so this is all I could ever do. I said, you're trying to tell me something. He said, go to the book of Amos. So if you had the book of Amos, I want to read the scripture.
May I interrupt you there for a second? Mm-hmm. You couldn't have done that on an airliner.
No, sir. No way.
Stand up and say, what'd you say, Lord?
No.
Okay, no, yeah. And the guy sitting over there saying, what the hell does he think he's doing?
You can't do that.
You can't do that.
No. This is so important. And those of you that are just now coming into these things, in the first place, Jesse and I and others, Keith Moore and Creflo and all of us, the world is in such a shape, we can't get there without this.
That's right.
We've got to have this. We would have, the mess that the airlines are in today, I would have to stop. I'm being very conservative. At least 75 to 80, more like 90% of what we're doing, because you can't get there from here.
It's impossible.
So and this was such a good illustration. I just, the Lord impressed me. That's why we're on that airplane. We can talk to God.
Oh, glory to God. It's true.
When I was flying for Oral Roberts, Brother DeWeese, my boss on the airplane, he said, now, Kenneth, this is sanctuary. It protects the anointing on Brother Roberts. And he said, you keep your mouth shut. Don't talk to him unless he talks. Because when he's on a meeting, he doesn't talk to anybody but God. Now, Oral used to fly airlines.
Right.
But even back there then, man, it got to the place where it was agitating his spirit.
Sure.
People coming up to him. He had become famous, and they wanting him to pray for him and all that. You can't manage that today.
Right.
This dope-filled world.
Right.
And get in a long tube with a bunch of demons.
Right. That's exactly the
point. And it's deadly.
And he works on you hard. It really does.
So I wanted to make that clear so the devil can't lie to you and say, see there, them preachers spending all that money, just fat cats riding around. No, we're not. We're in business to do. Listen, I could scratch my flying itch with my little single-engine, open cockpit airplane.
Right.
I just come home, fly around in that, and scratch my flying itch. That doesn't have nothing to do with that. But
we're in
soul business here.
Right.
We got a dying world around us. Just we got a dying nation around us.
That's right.
And we can't even get there on the
airline. You can't. Let me give you an example before I read the scripture. Some people say, why do you need an airplane? It started out about a couple of weeks ago. I was in Fort Worth. I preached on a Friday night and a Saturday. I was in Fort Worth preaching for Jerry Savelle. Sunday morning, I was in Boston, Massachusetts. Monday, I was in New Orleans. Tuesday, I was in Chicago. Wednesday, I was in Raleigh, North Carolina. Thursday, I was in New Orleans. Friday, I was in San Antonio, Texas. Saturday, I was in New Orleans. Sunday, I was in another city. I actually have a Delta captain that lives close to my house. I brought him that schedule. I said, can you fly this? He said, no, and I wouldn't. When do you sleep? We're about the
farthest. On the airplane.
On the airplane.
Come on.
The only way I can grab it, see?
Yeah.
Now, when God is speaking this to me, he said, so this is all I could ever do. And I'm thinking, in myself, well, yeah, this is a phenomenal aircraft you're giving us. He said, then when he said, you're going to let your faith stagnate, now that caught my attention. When God tells you your faith stagnate, you better start listening.
Well, yeah.
So, and I thought, stagnating?
You can't stay here.
Yes.
You got to do this or you're going to do this.
He said this, you're on cruise control. You're moving, but no longer by your power. See?
That's what the DVD is about.
That's what that DVD is about.
Yeah,
he said, you're moving, but no longer by your power. You see, you're just doing this. Now,
So there you have some of the rationalizations. Later on, near the end of it, they made a comment that when they're that high up in the sky, and there's no one else around, then they can communicate with God. Just imagine the loopholes in their arguments. But rather than debate them to show, okay, so you're doing an awful lot of traveling, you know, there's services that you can rent where you can be one of 15 people on a private small jet, get you to all those places, not expensive, and that way you save all that congregation's money. You don't have to spend $60 million just for the plane. Then every time that plane goes up in the air, it's about $50,000 cross country and back. And then you got to storage fees and licenses. And so there's a lot of alternatives rather than using the congregation's money and this whole idea that somehow you can't pray in coach because people would think you're strange. No. Thinking we're stupid enough to buy those explanations. That's strange. I'm Gary Knoll. Let's talk to people in the audience. It's Talk Back Time, 888-874-4888. And let's say hello to Joseph from Jamaica, New York. Hi, Joseph, your turn.
Yes, good afternoon, Gary. And when you talk about destabilizing countries, it's also right here in this country. High unemployment is not only about high profits. It's also about promoting high crime. You have guys like Oliver North with the guns and the drugs. That was to promote violence and disability. And meanwhile, he gets a TV show. You know, the news is presented in a way that serious issues aren't discussed. What good is a raise in the minimum wage if rents go up? And it just goes on and on.
Hold on, Joseph. You're conflating several issues simultaneously. What if you were to look at it a little differently? Please consider this, Joseph. Yes, it's entirely possible to be frustrated by all the things we see happening. But what are you for that is positive? If you're for raising the minimum wage, then why not join any one of hundreds of minimum wage campaigns, and especially in your area where you can lobby on behalf of those who want, let's say, a $15, whatever the amount is decided with a group, should be a starting place, then you're doing something positive. The argument that, well, I just made $15 an hour minimum wage, but now my rent's going to go up, it's not going to go up if you have rent stabilization, rent control. And if you're living in places where the rent is too high, don't live there. Right now, New York City and Brooklyn are the two of the three most expensive places in America to live. And part of the reason that Brooklyn is considered so expensive is not because everyone in Brooklyn is paying a lot of rent, but rather the brownstones that have been there for a long time, undervalued, quality living, suddenly became extremely valuable. The real estate became valuable. So where at one time in the 1970s, those would have been worth $100,000, now they're worth $5 million. Taxes go up, and then more people who have money want to live in a neighborhood where people have money. So what happens is it forces the people there, it doesn't force them, but they have a choice. More people now are selling their co-ops and condominiums than ever before in New York and Brooklyn. Taking that money, knowing there's going to be a crash, it's a huge bubble, the real estate market again, and moving out. But also, a lot of people are living in the supportive areas and that have not been gentrified, and therefore, you would be penalizing everyone everywhere if you said, well, I'm not going to fight for a higher minimum wage because they're just going to raise the rents. That's not universally true, but it would help the people no matter what. And then if the rents were raised, they at least have some options of the place to live. I'd rather see everyone get an increase in their standard of living and then let society challenge them on it than not to have that happen. To your other issue, when you talk about Oliver North, Oliver North is a neocon. He's a universalist. He's a big believer in one world government. He's in the perfect place. Don't blame Oliver North for being on, let's say, Fox or fascist network, because that's the gathering place. It's the honeypot of all very extreme neoliberal pro-war advocates. So, of course, that's who you're going to see. Even their so-called token liberal, like Juan Gonzalez, he's not a true liberal. He's not progressive on any issue. So don't watch Fox. Don't listen to Oliver North. It's his right to work there. It's their right to hire him. It's their right to broadcast. It's your right not to watch and not to listen. So look at the positive. Show me what you're for, this constructive, instead of giving me angst of what you're against and, oh, well, haplessness and anger. Then you sound like a member of a local station radio board where it's all negative all the time. Thank you for calling in. Let's say hello to Randolph from Montreal, Canada. Hi, Randolph, your turn.
What I can't understand what we're supposed to really believe in. Since all this kind of stuff is going on, you know, Barbara Tuchman said, you know, why do holders of high office so often act contrary to really the reasoned points and enlightened self-interest suggests? Why does intelligent mental process seem so often not to function?
And they talk. I would answer that with Randolph, I would answer your statement, which is a legitimate statement, with an English proverb. There is none so blind as those who won't see. I believe that the reason of life is to honor the sanctity of life. I believe that once we begin to realize and appreciate how many sentient beings there are, then how do we live in association, cooperation with those without altering to the disadvantage of that other? So I can't look at you as a Canadian. I have to look at you as a human being. I can't look at you as black or white. I have to look at you as a sacred soul. So the moment you look at people as sacred, then suddenly the arguments you would have for dismissiveness, hate, alienation, genocide are taken off the table. Now, you may not want to be appreciated that way. You may not see yourself that way, and you may not act that way, but that's your choice. My choice is still to consider you a person of value because I value life and I value the life of other people. We have a lot more in common as souls than we have in disagreement. The labeling that we accept, the compartmentalization that we tolerate, that's what causes our differences, and that's why there's so much conflict. Thank you very much for calling in, Randolph and Joseph. We're out of time now. Just want to finish the show by mentioning I'm going to be doing a very important webinar. It'll be the third week in May on a Sunday at 7 p.m. I have all the information that you could possibly ever need to know about slowing down and reversing the aging process, specifically the aging of the brain, such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, memory loss, dementia, depression, anxiety, the body, the heart, strengthening the heart, reducing heart attacks and stroke, lowering cholesterol, cleansing the liver, helping the kidneys, losing body fat, and how all this is based upon good science. There'll be a film followed by about, I'm guessing, 2.5 hours of me talking on this topic, sharing information, and answering your questions. My last two webinars were sold out. I'm sorry, people didn't have a chance to get in. So if you want to join us for my Anti-Aging, How to Live Forever seminar, webinar, go to GaryNall.com or ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, either one, and then you can see how you can join me if you wish to. I'm looking forward to a lot more information tomorrow. I have a lot of new stuff to share with you. Have a nice day, everyone. You gotta smile so bright. You know you could.